little disclaimer special to this episode. We apologize for some of the audio quality inconsistencies throughout, as happens during this pandemic when recording from multiple locations, occasionally on multiple devices with different levels of connectivity in certain countries. The audio quality can be a little less than we'd love, but please, we hope you enjoy the quality of the content and you can bear with us on the audio on this episode. Thanks. Hola, hello, and bienvenido to Mentors Today, powered by Growth Hacks, the world's first weekly bilingual, binational podcast built entirely to answer the questions of entrepreneurs throughout Latin America. I'm Rob Ryan, the founder of Growth Hacks, and I am here with my partner and friend, co-host Ileana Jaime.
Cada semana responderemos dudas de emprendedores de alrededor de América Latina y discutiremos sobre los temas más relevantes del ecosistema de emprendimiento. Queremos escucharte. Bienvenido.
We've got a real treat for you this week. You know, we've said from the beginning that we're going to continually experiment with the show, as you all should with the content in your own businesses. And so today what we're doing, rather than answering questions that have been recorded and submitted by you entrepreneurs all around Latin America, we've actually brought two entrepreneurs into the studio with us to record. They brought their own questions, and as a group, the four of us are going to discuss and try and answer their questions, which we hope will help you all with some of the same problems that we're sure you're facing. Ileana's joining us today from Guadalajara. I'm recording here in Los Angeles as usual, and our special friends Andriana and Mario are joining us from Fort Collins, Colorado, and Lima, Peru.
Hi, everybody.
Bienvenidos a Mentors Today. Es un gusto tenerlos acá. Qué mejor que tener de primera mano emprendedores que hagan este tipo de cuestionamientos y que en conjunto podamos resolver o comentar acerca de ello.
Sí, I'm going to give a little bit of background on both of you, just so our audience knows a little bit more about you.
First off, Andriana Castellanos is an amazing Guatemalan creator of a company called Affinidata. And Affinidata is using artificial intelligence to provide access to quality early childhood education. She's a huge advocate of the reality that data and technology are tools that can change the world by improving access to education for more people globally. On the other end of the spectrum, down in South America tonight, we've got Mario Gil, who's the founder of a company called Betterer. And Betterer is an exciting loyalty and payments platform in the fintech space being born and grown from Lima. Not only is Mario one of my favorite founder surfers in the world and an overall great guy, but he is daily accomplishing another rare feat in Latin America that is building a cash flow positive and stable company that's growing with clients in multiple markets in Latin America at the same time. And he's been doing that for a few years now. So bienvenido to you all and on with the show.
Qué loco que tres años después nos encontramos, bueno, nos conocimos en Chile y vivimos muchas cosas juntos y ahora estamos desde nuestra casa en medio de la pandemia haciendo home office como nunca hubiéramos pensado, ¿no? Andriana, un gustazo tenerte acá. Ya sabes que soy tu fan número uno. Aparte, eras mi roomie, eres mi amiga, es partners en muchas cosas. Y pues Mario también, feliz de tenerte aquí.
Hola a todos, gracias por tenerme acá. Súper feliz de estar compartiendo con los tres y recordar de una diferente manera la experiencia que tuvimos en Chile juntos. Bueno, yo soy Andriana, soy fundadora de Affinidata, que es una tutora virtual de estimulación temprana que utiliza inteligencia artificial para dar acceso a recursos de primera infancia a los padres de familia. Estas son actividades educativas para niños entre 0 y 6 años, diseñadas para que impacten su desarrollo. Y bueno, desde el 2017, cuando empezó todo en Chile, hasta la fecha, hoy hemos crecido a casi 100,000 familias alrededor del mundo y hemos logrado pues bastantes hitos y reconocimientos. Hemos sido afortunados de ser reconocidos por buenas y prestigiosas instituciones como UNICEF, Harvard, e incluso tuvimos una experiencia en el Medio Oriente que fue bastante más global y este año estamos también lanzando o empezando a explorar el mercado aquí en los Estados Unidos.
Conozco desde el día uno cuando era apenas estabas haciendo algunas pruebas y ahorita ver todo lo que has crecido, pues es bastante emocionante. Sí,
bueno, las dos, ¿no? Desveladas en la computadora haciendo pruebas y garabatos.
Mario, cuéntanos un poquito más de BD.
Hola, bueno, yo soy el fundador de BDR. Nosotros somos una empresa de loyalty y pagos, de hecho enfocado en los SMEs en Latinoamérica. De hecho, operamos en Perú y entramos a México a inicios de año porque entramos a una aceleradora que se llama Startup Bootcamp de Finovista, que de alguna manera nos ayudó un poco a esta entrada a México. De hecho, bueno, esta entrada a México nos agarró en mitad de pandemia, pero igual ha sido, de hecho, una buena experiencia entender un poco la perspectiva del mercado mexicano, que es algo un poco que buscamos crecer. De hecho, nosotros lo que hacemos es ayudar a los comercios desde la perspectiva de darles un sistema de loyalty muy parecido al de Starbucks Rewards, complementado con un sistema de pagos para ayudarlos a crecer. De hecho, nosotros partimos siendo un sistema de loyalty más corporate, ¿no? Para empresas más grandes, para empresas medianas. Decidimos un poco focalizarnos más bien en los pequeños por un tema de escalamiento y crecimiento, por un tema de oportunidad de mercado. Actualmente trabajamos con los dos mercados, con las empresas grandes, pero también con las empresas chiquitas. Pero a largo plazo nuestro foco es hacia las empresas más chicas y medianas por crecimiento. Entonces, este año partió muy bien, partió un poco con esta entrada a México y con muchas oportunidades de crecimiento. Ahora un poco la pandemia nos toma más como un reto para replantear muchas cosas y felizmente se nos han aparecido nuevas oportunidades para más bien aprovechar este contexto, ¿no? Entonces, en general, súper contento, bastante tiempo de hecho con BDR, y creo que parte ha sido un poco la experiencia de un poco entender un poco el mercado poco a poco, ¿no?
Buenísimo. Sí, creo que este es tiempo de para todos que nos ha servido para reinventarnos y justamente I would like, you know, this is a bilingual podcast, so I will switch a little in English and I would like to wrap to kick us with the first question.
Thank you. All right. So we're going to have a little Q&A now for the rest of the show today. Mario and Adriana brought some questions to the table that we'll discuss, but I'm going to kick us off just because I thought it would be like help the energy. Right. And so let's go to the obvious thing that we hear about in the podcast and that I hear about in my business and that I know you guys experience and talk about every day, anytime you run into other founders. What do you think the three hardest parts of being an entrepreneur in Latin America are?
I think being an entrepreneur itself is hard. Like I always get this question of like, what is to be a female founder or what is to be a LATAM founder? The first thing I want to say is like being an entrepreneur is hard. And I remember I mentioned in one of your Instagrams, like you kind of have to be delusional and kind of like, I don't know, like lie to yourself, telling that it's not that hard in order to keep going. So that's the first thing I want to say, like in general. And the next thing I think is hard, like specifically related to Latin America, is the exposure, like in terms of like role models, not that we don't have them, but we have less. So, you know, they say like people who run marathons, if a lot of your friends have run marathons, then you think like, oh, it's easy. I can also do it because you have a reference, you have a, you know, like somebody to look after. I actually run a half marathon because all my husband's friends do it. So I thought, oh, it's gonna be easy. So in your brain, you create this idea. So I think that's the first thing that's hard, that we don't look like global. We only know about these like super successful entrepreneurs like Mark Zuckerberg. Or,
right.
But we don't have an in-between that is really close to us. And when you're exposed to that, then you start thinking like, oh, maybe it's not that hard. So that's the first thing I would like to say to entrepreneurs in Latin America, to look for role models or people in between, like people like us that are not like super, you know, successful.
Normal
people. Yeah, like normal people. But I think that's what's hard. Like you don't have accessibility as easy. Like here in the US, you kind of like have more examples to look after or are more exposed. So like the more you can be in your ecosystem or in your hub, the easier we'll get. That will be my number one. My number two will be access to capital. Like that's very obvious. We have never accessed capital in Latin America, and I don't want to say we will not, but the only time we try it, the deals were very different. All our investors are global, like we have people from Switzerland, the New York, and even like the Middle East, like I mentioned, and just the deal and the long-term vision of investors is very different from my little experience, because I don't have a lot of experience, but I have heard like there is just this more conservative view on the investment side in Latin America. That's not a lot startup focus and this win or lose, you know, like no win-win, I don't know. So that I would say is the second one.
Can I interrupt on that? Because I would love for you to add one more little piece to this.
Yes.
And it comes from a conversation I wound up in the middle of last night. You'll really dig this. So I was on this other app community last night hosting this conversation with a bunch of entrepreneurs and investors. And we wound up with two Latinx founders, one a Guatemalan American who was born in Guatemala and moved to Los Angeles when she was two, and one a Guatemalan American who was born in Guatemala, lived there till she was 18, and then came to the US to go to university and lives here now. And they were discussing having, one was really fascinating, they were discussing having basically really different but shared Guatemalan experiences, right? From their different life points of view. But they both mentioned, and so I want to ask you, like you talk about inaccessibility of capital, and you've been all around the region. You've been to Mexico and Chile and Argentina, South America. Like in the region, is it even harder to get capital in Central America, in Guatemala, in Honduras? I mean, is it even a question worth asking? Because the answer is so obviously yes.
So what I would answer to that question is I don't know, because my vision was always global. And I always thought like, it's gonna be like super hard to gain it. So I might as well go and look around like everywhere instead of just looking here. And that's back to my reference of like, if you go to the global mentality, then it's a different path type of thing. Because then you're not limiting yourself. And I think that's the biggest challenge as a Latin American you have to overcome. Like, yes, I already know all these potential investors in Guatemala probably, but it's probably going to be as hard to raise capital here than with people in Switzerland. It's the same process. I might as well try both. So I don't think I'm the person to answer that question, because we never look for like local capital.
No, that's fair. But that also just part of the answer already says something about the environment locally, right? So, yeah.
But I wouldn't say it's because I thought the local capital was bad. It was just because I always felt like I want to do something that's very scalable. Yeah. So I'm just going to look for the best opportunities no matter where they are type of thing. So I know a little bit about it. One time I tried it, it was a very different feeling on the negotiation. And that's all what I can speak of. That the feeling was more pressure, more rush into buying stuff. And the third, I would say, I think it's a challenge, but it's also like a strength in terms of talent. I think we have very good talent and actually like super hardworking, but sometimes one of the challenges is language. Like sometimes I find someone that's super good, but they don't speak as good English. And when you want to go global, you have to look for that people. So you might find one piece, but you don't find the other one. So I think it's a strength, but it's also a challenge in Latin America to find people with both, like English, very strong English, startup-oriented
mentality,
mindset, exactly.
You have to look for talent in Guadalajara because we
yes, because that's a hub, you know. They have been more exposed. And that goes to back to my number one thing. Like, if they had been exposed, I think it's different. And I'm not saying you cannot find it. It's just a little bit challenged sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And Mario?
I discovered three big problems. But I think these three big problems maybe could be three big opportunities. No? Mm-hmm. One is the companies are not too open to innovation, to startups, to new things. So I think that is a big problem. It depends what kind of product you have in the market. Maybe the pandemic is a good way to accelerate this kind of problem. But in a normal way, in a normal life, companies are not too open to try new technology, new opportunities in the market. So maybe that is a big problem if you are looking to disrupt a new market. The second thing could be the people, but maybe from a different point of view. It's more that the mindset of the tech people in Latin America is different than in US or Europe. People in Latin America is looking more for a work, for a job with a good salary. People in US and Europe understand that the concept of a startup and look for a expectation of this growing, this, you know what I mean? It's more the vision of a founder. It's different.
So if I'm hearing it right, so like in those first, let's say 2 to 10 employees in the US, in your example, like in the US or Europe, those first employees might think of themselves as like co-creators. What you're saying is your experience is more in LATAM is like that second or third employee, that person's like, think like it's a job. Like it's a, I could go to work for the university or the government or better.
So I think that is it's a big problem because it's difficult to get good talent, good people to grow your company. Maybe to have a new partner in part of the business. So maybe it's a problem right now, but could be a big opportunity in the next months with this kind of problem like the pandemic. No. I think the third problem is the same, is the funding. I think it's better right now than 2 years ago, but it's not the big market with more funding in the world, but it's, in the other hand, it's a good opportunity to grow and be that big player, that unicorn in the region. Is a good space to grow. So it's like you don't have Mark Zuckerberg, you don't have an Uber and Google, but you have the space and opportunity to grow and be that big player, no?
No, those are great. Ile, what do you think?
I agree with both of you and kind of disagree about the thing of the exposure of the founders, because I think we have, but the thing is we have more like a culture to look for big stories like the ones that are in the United States. I mean, one Chilean company had a big round of investment, the NotCo company. So yeah, these kind of companies are like the role models that you were saying that maybe there are not there. And I think it's like kind of a responsibility of us to make them shine because they are there, but we tend to promote more the ones that we are used to promote instead of promote our heroes. So that's the thing that I will add. And the other thing about talent and to own teams, yeah, I think that's a big challenge. But now with the pandemic, a lot of people went digital. And it's getting easier to have more compelling talent for the companies.
Right. Like now you don't only have to recruit in Guadalajara. Like you could literally recruit anywhere, hypothetically.
That's my point, that right now you can have talent from everywhere in the world. So that is a big opportunity for everybody now that we are more digitalized and the processes are becoming more standardized. So that helps the companies to grow their businesses and to have more compelling talent to join their company.
Yeah, no, that's great. All right, so I wanted to ask like a quick follow-on question because everybody brought up one of the same things. I say a lot in all of my conversations that the problem on the money end isn't that there isn't what we would refer to as like venture capital available. Like it's not that companies are dying because they can't find groups that have $500,000 or $1 million or $2 million. It's the companies in LATAM are dying. Most the ones that die are dying because they can't find the first 25,000 or 50,000 or 75,000. And since I have two world-class like Latin American entrepreneurs here, I want to know, is that true what I'm saying all the time? Because I think it is, but I wanted to see if you guys agree with that.
I agree. Yeah. I think that somebody told me this and at the time I thought like, oh, he's just so crazy because your first money is so hard to get. But somebody told me like, there is so much money out there. Be careful what money you take. And at some point you're gonna be deciding what money to take and what money not to take. And be super careful about who you bring in. And at the time I thought like, that's just crazy. But it's true, there is a lot of grants and opportunities and accelerators and so many, like there is a lot of money out there. I'm not saying it's easy to get, but the first batch of money, because you don't have your, but it's not about the money and how it flows. It's about you as an entrepreneur. You don't have it clear. Like it's a process to get your message across, your business model. So once you, like you just have to be focused on what's important and the money will come. And I know that sounds like a cliche because when I hear it the first time was like, these people are just crazy, but it's true.
Mario, you think the same? Like we're the ones that are dying, they're struggling. It's there's not enough angels. There's not enough, because in LATAM, right, we don't have the typical friends and family round of it, right? Everybody's shaking their heads, right? No, that's of course not. And yet we teach that. Like we teach you guys that like friends and family. And then you guys are like, you leave the room and go, what are they talking about? There is no friends and family. So then there's not enough angels and there's not a friends and family. So there's this unfortunate canyon between that and like the next level.
Yeah, actually there is a space between the friends and family funding, maybe Serie B of funding in Latin America. You have a lot of money in Serie B in Latin America because it's more, maybe more comfortable for the investors. I think that a big challenge is in the seed Serie A space when the companies don't know what is the meaning of the startup. Yeah. Maybe that is the challenge of the founder to get that attention.
To Adriana's point, right? Yeah, that's great. Amazing. That's cool.
Let's switch to your questions now.
See, this is like that moment at the bar where I would say, I'm going to go get us some more beers. And then I would come back and Adriana would have asked like some really important question that everybody would be debating while I was gone.
This would be like 3 a.m. in our couch in the apartment.
What big questions are on your mind, Adriana?
So I have two, pero voy a cambiar a español. La primera, de hecho, estaba relacionado a esto del funding, como siempre hay un estereotipo que necesitas funding. ¿Cómo fue ese proceso para ustedes en cuanto a priorizar el funding sobre el desarrollo del producto? Como en tu cabeza, Mario, o Ile, o Rob, estaba la pregunta como ¿necesito dinero y después empezar? O estaba como ¿necesito hacer esto y después veamos qué pasa y tal vez alguien me ayuda? Porque creo que muchos emprendedores no se hacen ni siquiera la pregunta, sino es como necesito este dinero para empezar. Y yo siempre me hice la pregunta, nunca, siempre mi proceso fue al revés, como ¿cómo puedo yo programar esto y probarlo antes de quién me puede dar dinero en mi familia?
Creo que eso es un, Es una pregunta que se hace cualquier emprendedor y no solamente emprendedor de startup. O sea, a veces es una limitante que se ponen las personas al iniciar cualquier proyecto porque creen que necesitan tener dinero para poder poner el negocio de, no sé, de pasteles o lo que tú quieras, de que, ay, no, pues es que pues no puedo porque pues tengo, necesito una cocina industrial. Pues no, o sea, podrías hacer el pastel en tu casa, lo vendes en la cuadra y vas viendo si, si se movió, o sea, como puedes hacer, como utilizar herramientas que existen y ir validando. O sea, como, ¿qué viene primero, el dinero o la idea? Yo, en mi caso, creo que en algún momento sí fui de las personas que me ponía esta barrera, como de que no, pues no tengo dinero, o sea, ¿de qué voy a vivir? Tengo que, necesito sueldo, etcétera. Pero ya después me di cuenta que, pues, al contrario, te tienes que lanzar con lo que tienes a la mano y ir validando, y eso solito te va a ir llevando por el camino del dinero. No sé qué piensas tú, Mario.
Sí, o sea, yo creo lo mismo. O sea, creo que la mejor demostración que tú puedes darle a un primer inversor es eso, que un poco tú estás invirtiendo tu tiempo, estás invirtiendo el poco dinero que tú tengas para invertir al inicio, para crear tu negocio. Y un poco creo que es importante esa primera validación o esos primeros clientes para un poco darle confianza a un inversor. Entonces, pero también creo que hay tipos de negocios, más hablando ya de startups, que sí son necesarias las inversiones. Depende mucho de la industria, ¿no? Si hablamos de industrias más mobile, más web, de repente es posible prototipar, es posible hacer algo más pequeño, es posible hacerte partner de un developer para hacer algo pequeño y poder lanzarlo al mercado. Pero no sé, si mi idea es algo más espacial, más robótico.
Sí,
pero de alguna manera tengo la idea muy clara y muy la visión muy clara de lo que quiero hacer, creo que ahí cambia un poco la figura, ahí cambia un poco la forma de la necesidad del dinero, de si es el huevo o la gallina, y creo que ahí sí es necesario la gallina, creo sería, para de alguna manera poder iniciar el negocio, porque si no es imposible, es como que simplemente tienes un paper o simplemente algún tipo de documento y nada más se avala. Y el segundo comentario que creo que también es importante mencionar, y es algo que creo que he aprendido en el tiempo, y no necesariamente lo aplico bien, el levantar plata es un trabajo full time. O sea, de hecho, es algo que la gente no lo ve así, lo ve como que, ah, bueno, en mi tiempo libre tengo de CEO, voy a levantar plata. Y no es así. De hecho, es algo bastante complicado, más en Latinoamérica, es un poco un trabajo de bastante tiempo, y es importante tenerlo en cuenta. Saber que cuando estás en ese momento, vas a dedicarle bastante tiempo a ese tipo de proceso, y porque es algo importante para el crecimiento de tu empresa. O sea, depende de qué quieres hacer, ¿no? Porque si quieres un negocio un poco más chico, no es necesario que levantes capital. Al contrario, mientras menos te diluyas y las acciones queden en tu lado, mejor. Pero si quieres hacer un startup, venture capital, de crecimiento rápido y ser grandazo, sí es necesario.
Sí, o sea, yo creo como que tener por lo menos la visión a largo plazo, ¿no? Igual en un inicio no, pero como que sí va a llegar, no sé, en 4 años, ah, ok, a lo mejor aquí ya voy a poder empezar a buscar dinero, ya lo voy a necesitar. O sea, como que sí hacerte un roadmap de hacia dónde va la empresa y en qué momento sería necesario. What do you think, Rob, about this?
So I think it's super individualized to the founder. Right? Like, I think it's obviously whatever their unique circumstances is, but then I also think there's like the bigger cultural truth that exists, right? So if we were asking a room full of Argentinians founders right now, they would take the idea on the back of a napkin and go to a bar and find somebody to sell it to in beta version within like the first hour. Because instinctively, the Argentinian DNA is like, I'm going to take my idea and I'm going to go charge somebody for it and make money. Like, so they would sell first, right? If we were in Silicon Valley, they would probably say, like, we have to go raise $10 million because I need to have a $100,000 salary and I've got to pay for my apartment in San Francisco or else it's not a valid idea. If we were in Chile, the Chilean might be like, okay, where do I sign up for the government program, the incubator, the accelerator? Like, where do I get the government money, right? And that would be the first instinct. So I think there's a cultural reality. My DNA personally always leans towards like find somebody to sell something to, right? So start, find somebody to sell whatever it is you have to, and then build it and iterate it and evolve it over time. But, you know, I mean, I'm also a 50-year-old white guy in the US, right? So If I were in different circumstances in Guatemala City or Honduras, I might say like, I literally can't even take the time away from my day job to work on this as a side hustle unless I can know that I have a little bit of income from it. So I think every circumstance is different, right?
Sí. Y mi pregunta, Eva, un poco es relacionada a eso, porque siento como que en todos estos cursos de entrepreneurs o cuando ves a un entrepreneur es como, bueno, vamos a coacharte para el pitch. Y, o bueno, estas son las rondas y así se manejan. Y esta es la serie seed y el capital y la convertible note. Pero nunca, o sea, a mí, yo como que soy ingeniero industrial, entonces un poco más lineal. Nunca te explica como el proceso de, ok, si quieres un lifestyle business, this is the process you should follow. If you're that's what I was wondering, como qué proceso siguieron ustedes y a veces, todavía ya después de varios años, a veces la pregunta es como, is this the right moment to, because it is a lot of work to be, you're sacrificing other things from the company when you're fundraising or...
So I'll be the opinionated gringo here since my co-host doesn't like to take controversial stances on things sometimes. So out of respect for her, I'll take this one for the team. So I honestly, I think you're right. Like that's to me, it's one of the fundamental flaws of how we're teaching entrepreneurship in LATAM right now, right? We're defaulting to, we're trying to copy, and I say we, like the system, the industry, right? And you're not included in that. Ileana and I are included in that, right? So the industry is trying to copy and paste still, trying to just copy and paste Silicon Valley playbook and apply it to Guatemala and Peru and Chile and Argentina. And I love our Chilean friends and we love, you know, where we met and Startup Chile and all those things, but you know, they're not being innovative at all. They're literally just copy and pasting an American model. And that's not, it's humble opinion. It's hurting more founders' development than it is helping, in my humble opinion, not just them, just the universal reality in LATAM and developing countries. Like I'm talking to founders in Africa and the Middle East and Southeast Asia, and they're telling us the same things. They're just, everybody is still copying and pasting.
Do you think it's just developing countries? Because I think it's hearing also the ecosystem here, not just like, I think I didn't understand it for so long. Like, okay, if my route is like a lifestyle business, I shouldn't be investing time in this. And the first place I learned that was here in the US. So I don't know, that's a good point.
That's a great point. I mean, we've lionized the startup founder and we've demonized anybody who builds any other kind of business. Mm-hmm. And the irony is I always say, and this is why I say like in our world, like entrepreneurial economic development, I don't say ecosistema anymore, right? I say the entrepreneurial economy because I think what LATAM really needs is for these two realities to kind of merge because LATAM needs companies that creates jobs, that create income, that elevate the middle class, that you guys can create more opportunity and then innovative technologies and new services and new business models and better educational systems. And all. But like, that's not just going to come from creating like six companies worth $1 billion. I mean, God bless Mercado Libre, but the greatest thing about Mercado Libre is it took those guys 21 years to get to this point. Like they toiled away for a decade before anybody cared about them or they were considered to be anything other than just building like a technology software development services company, right? Like, I mean, the real answer to Andreana's question is like, we teach extremes mm-hmm. and then the role models are extremes and the reality of life and business and, you know, entrepreneurship is the middle road, the 80% of companies mm-hmm. that are in the middle. And great question, by the way.
Okay, so I would like to switch to Mario. Do you have a question or something that you want to discuss?
Voy a hacerla en castellano.
Adelante.
¿Qué tan importante piensan que es en una startup el cofundador? O sea, o el tener partners en Latinoamérica. O sea, ¿qué tanta importancia le ven en todo, ¿eh? No solamente a nivel de negocios, sino a nivel mental, psicológico, emocional,
¿Qué tan importante es eso? Y segundo, ¿qué cantidad es la correcta para emprender en Latinoamérica? Pero lo primero es, o sea, ¿qué tan importante o qué tanto valor le dan a un cofundador o cofundadores en todo este journey de ser entrepreneur, que de hecho es súper complicado, ¿no?
Pues bueno, aquí Adriana nos podría decir un poquito su perspectiva. Creo que ella lo ha hecho pues prácticamente sola. Obviamente tienes un equipo que te respalda y has creado este funding, bueno, no funding, más bien has creado este equipo y uniendo talento específico, pero que me gustaría saber tu perspectiva de eso. ¿Crees que necesitarías tener un co-founder o se te hace algo que te hubiera gustado tener o buscarías tener a lo mejor un late co-founder que se una a tu equipo o cómo ves esa parte?
O en tu siguiente startup, o sea, ¿cómo lo...? Ajá. ¿Cómo lo plantearías? O sea, ya que experimentaste este tema de emprender sola, ¿cómo lo harías la siguiente vez?
No, yo creo que Mario y yo estamos en la misma página. No sé qué tanto nos podamos ayudar uno al otro, tal vez llamándonos en la noche, porque, bueno, yo empecé con el proyecto muy, muy, muy temprano, cuando era un proyecto de universidad con dos amigos de la universidad. Y fue súper duro cuando ellos se decidieron retirar, que pues... Y bueno, yo decidí, este es mi sueño, yo quiero continuar. Y no es que yo decidí ser un solo founder. Digamos que la vida decidió por mí ser un solo founder. Y sí es muy... Creo que es lo más difícil en realidad de asimilar. Y yo estoy abierta, pero es bastante solitario. No sé si... A veces yo digo... O sea, estos espacios son súper buenos porque con tu equipo, yo los amo y son lo máximo, pero es una relación distinta. No hay cosas que no puedes como vent. O no quieres animarlos o quieres como cuidar su... No sé, siempre está la carga como en tus hombros de emocional. Yo creería que la carga más que laboral es emocional, el no tener con quién compartir la carga emocional, o incluso cuando algo pasa, a lo que decía Mario, sí, el equipo se alegra y mi equipo es súper lindo y se alegran muchísimo cuando logramos algo, pero no sé hasta qué punto lo sienten como tan suyo de ellos, ¿no? Entonces... tener alguien con quien compartir eso, a veces sí veo como, no sé, me hubiera gustado o me gustaría encontrar incluso un late founder, pero no ha ocurrido. Y también en el otro punto pienso como hay ciertas cosas que han sido más fáciles porque es como, ok, bueno, nos aventamos esto y si me equivoqué, ni modo, pero nos subimos a un avión y vamos a ir a intentar este otro programa en el medio de la nada. Y es como ya, ¿no? Entonces, sí creo que si lo encontrara tendría que ser mucha química a nivel emocional, a nivel de mindset. Y no sé, seguro como encontrar una pareja, ¿no? Cuesta y a veces no llega y también está bien. Pero sí creo que es un poco más difícil la carga emocional y un poco más ágil la carga de agilidad en la toma de decisiones.
¿Y si volvieras a emprender, buscarías desde un inicio tener co-founders?
Yo busqué. Yo quería tener
co-founders. No, o sea, tenías, pero...
Sí, tenía, pero si volviera a emprender, no sé, yo creo que tendría que... No hay una respuesta como solo founder o co-founder. Es más sobre con quién me encuentro en la vida y si hay esa química, tendría que pasar.
Te vuelves ahí más exigente, o sea, es un poco, o sea, ya has pasado tantas batallas que un poco, o sea, te vuelves un poco más exigente sobre el perfil de quién va a ser ese complemento, no solamente en el lado de trabajo y laboral, como dice Adriana, sino es básicamente en la parte emocional de si va a poder enfrentar esta caída de olas grandes que va a llegar. Y que tienes que pasar, ¿no? O sea, no, yo creo que no, la mayoría de gente no está preparada. Es difícil encontrar ese cofundador que por lo menos tenga ese mismo
drive,
ímpetu, fortaleza,
resiliencia.
Es un montón de cosas que no son fáciles de encontrar. Talento hay gente, tengo muchos amigos muy talentosos que son muy buenos en sus cosas, pero creo que el ser emprendedor es algo un poco más complejo, es algo un poco más, no sé cuál es la palabra, más integral, ¿no? De repente ya es too much la palabra, pero es algo un poco que involucra más skills. Entonces es difícil llegar a esas personas, ¿no? O hay pocas opciones de repente.
Sí. Y sí. Bueno, yo quiero decir que a mí me ocasionó mucho problema al principio cuando estás solo. O sea, es muchísimo más duro. Y ahora que estamos como escalando, porque de cierta manera es más difícil dejar ir las cosas. Entonces tú te vuelves más exigente con el equipo y más exigente en tratar de controlar las cosas porque estabas acostumbrado a estar solo. Entonces, sí creo que es un reto ser un solo entrepreneur, como, y de hecho el otro día estaba pensando esto, así que qué bueno que lo trajiste al colación, Mario, que debería de existir un grupo de solo entrepreneurs que los mismos CEOs se pudieran apoyar, porque no, para poder como...
Un directorio.
Sí, como un directorio con quien conversar y... Así, bueno, como ahorita estamos así, entonces...
Peer-to-peer de solo entrepreneurs.
Uh-huh.
Pero Mario, ¿tú eres solo?
O sea, mi equipo de gente somos como 15, 16 personas, pero lo que pasa es que yo después de Startup Chile cambié de socios. O sea, tuve un problema con socios. Yo tuve que hacer una reestructuración de socios. Y si bien tengo socios, de hecho, o sea, yo lidero la empresa y soy el socio mayoritario. Entonces, no me considero un solo entrepreneur, pero sí me he cargado un poco el cambio. O sea, yo sí he hecho un poco... No porque mis dos grupos de socios no lo hayan hecho, sino que como cambié de socios, un poco ese cambio me lo comí yo. Sí entiendo un poco lo que comenta Adriana sobre ese feeling de estar solo, pero a la vez yo sí busqué más bien complementar un poco esos espacios para alguna manera seguir avanzando... Bueno, hacia la nueva visión que planteé de Better. Entonces, sí es complicado, pero también, como vuelvo a decir, es complicado encontrar a la gente adecuada para pasar esta sola, ¿no?
Sí, y yo, bueno, ahora que me toca ver como muchas empresas, pasa mucho esto como lo que tú dices, Mario. Sí hay co-founders, pero hay uno que es como el líder, que aunque tengan equipo, sigue siendo como un camino solo. Tú como emprendedor vas viviendo tus batallas, etcétera, aunque tengas co-founders. Y lo que he visto más o menos... en cuanto a cantidad, como el número ideal, yo creo que son 3. Ya después de eso, sí se vuelve un poquito más complicado.
O sea, lo que pasa es lo que tú dices, es que, y de hecho, o sea, me pasa cuando, no sé, estoy en una acercadora, o cuando estaba en Chile, ¿no? Que te das cuenta de que el líder, CEO, o el puesto que tenga, de hecho, tiene mucho más protagonismo que los demás y tiene mucha más carga de responsabilidad. Entonces, es un poco... Lo que dice Adriana, la carga emocional, que a pesar de que no estás solo, igual tienes un poco bastante más carga de cosas y eso lo hace también complicado, ¿no? Entonces, también es importante ver eso. Es como que el líder de una startup es como si fuera el 10 del partido de fútbol, es como que el que lidera al final en la cancha, ¿no? Entonces, eso lo hace complicado en el camino. Tienes que saber un poco manejarlo, ir formando ese equipo.
Si te pone el spotlight.
Yo creo que es importante como a veces lo hacen por complacer los inversionistas, porque siempre dicen que el team, y por qué no tienes founders, y o sea, no sé, en mi opinión es mejor ser transparente en cuanto, ok, a veces me he topado en pitches que tiene el 2% alguien, y es como, o sea, está bien, pero... Si tú eres el líder y no son realmente co-founders, yo creo que es mejor ser transparente acerca de eso que tratar de crear un puesto o una estructura.
O llenar un espacio solo para como llenar palomita, ¿no?
Uh-huh. Exacto.
What do you think, Rob, about this?
Endless debate. This is a forever debate in the startup world.
And actually, this is a really good question for you. How is your experience like with your company?
So like the super broad answer is, again, like we said before, right? It's a very individual circumstance, a very individual choice. Like if you're a couple of people or two people that co-create the idea, literally like, hey, we have this idea at the exact same, like, yes, let's do that. Then you're co-founders, right? Like, and then you've got to find your complements. But I think the bigger thing, and I picked it up from some of what Mario was saying, right, is you fundamentally, you've got to complement your skill set, right? And I think that's where a lot of co-founders, LATAM or anywhere, that's where a lot of those marriages go wrong early, is because if they were the two people sitting at the table that gave birth to the idea, and then they are like, oh, we're co-founders. What if you're both like marketing and salespeople? Or what if you're both coders? Or what if you're both, this is like, what if you're not complementary? Like, what if you're literally the same, right? Then you've immediately got like a conflicted situation in the business aspect of the relationship, right? So to me, it's always, you've got to build your team. If you're the person that came up with the idea as the individual or like the lead visionary, like you've got to build your team one way or the other. You've got to complement your skill sets. So if you're a founder who's strong at X, you've got to surround yourself with Y and Z and A and B. And if one of those people rises to the level that they want to share the risk, and I think some of what Andriana was saying in the early part of her answer, like share the emotional burden and the risks that go with being a co-founder and a co-creator of something like we are on this little podcast of ours, like that's sharing the emotional burden. Like that no one works for the other. Like this is, we own this thing. It's our names on it, right? We've got to co-create it. I'll say in my own journey, just to tie this answer up real quickly, it was a crazy typical story. Like it was my idea. A friend, just a true friend, was helping me build like an iteration of what the original OG version of Growth Hacks was 2 years before I met any of you in Southern California. He then said, I think you need Y to complement your X. And I know the perfect guy that is Y. And it was like hiring or interviewing for a co-founder, which when you go down that path, I disagree with the normal wisdom that's out there, like in the startup world, which I think that's ridiculous. Like, but I did it and I shouldn't have, because that marriage lasted like 6 months. And it was a bad fit from the beginning because he walked into the relationship. Nope, he's not a bad person. He's a wonderful guy and very talented. But like he walked in and when given that title, he literally was like, well, I think the baby should look like this. And I'm like, whoa, wait, whoa, no. Hey, I gave birth to this baby before you even ever like were around. So we're not seeing this the same way. And then that went on for like 6 months, even though he was a perfect skill set complement to my ex defined leader, sales guy, relationship person, public face. He was the coder, the technical guy, et cetera. But it was just a bad fit. And so then Growth Hacks became, it just reverted back to me, right? Until ironically now 3.5 years or so later, when someone who had become a de facto helper and then employee and then teammate and then kind of partner elevated himself to carry so much of the emotional burden and to carry so much of the ownership of what it could become, that I, in this January pre-pandemic of 2020, I took that title out of the box again. And I said to my partner, David, in Tijuana, hey, I think this title represents something that is important for the outside world. And between you and I, it represents me like really like coveting you and rewarding you and also respecting you in another way. Like I want to invite you even closer into the circle if that's possible. And he was over the moon grateful for it, right? And has exhibited nothing but like earned credit and respect since then with it. So I've had like the whole journey. But everybody's is different, right? But like, again, the narratives that we get taught, we got to do better, right? Because we still teach like, if you don't have a founder, you got to find one. You can't do this by yourself and nobody will invest in you. And like that's getting chipped away at. There's more and more investors that are also, by the way, starting venture capital firms by themselves nowadays, as opposed to having 10 partners. So there's a whole changing narrative, I think, that we're in the early days of, but That's, you guys asked really good questions today. Holy cow, what a conversation. I wish we had beers.
And I think we are good, like, from this to do like a little wrap up of everything that we've been talking about all this this episode. Primeramente, pues bueno, I would switch again to Spanish. Muchas gracias a los dos por venir a este episodio. Me encantó escucharlos. Las preguntas estuvieron buenísimas. Que hablamos de temas muy universales, desde cuáles son los retos de cualquier emprendedor en Latinoamérica. Todo lo que ustedes dijeron fue muy, muy valioso. Creo que fueron comentarios muy, muy acertados. Y que seguramente le van a servir mucho a los a quien está escuchando esta conversación.
Sí, hey, I just want to say a special thank you to both of you, to all three of you, all as a group. But what you don't know is that when we gave birth to this idea of mentors today, the whole concept behind it was that you guys just became mentors for the day, right? So hundreds of young entrepreneurs throughout Latino America and Estados Unidos are going to listen to this. And they're going to take lessons away from a couple of really cool, smart, normal role models that are just hustling and working hard for years at a time to build good businesses. And that's what we need more of. So we're part of the solution today. For all the things that we said about Latino American entrepreneurialism that could be better, you guys investing an hour with us to create this content for everybody, you're part of the solution. So we're making it better. So I'm really super grateful. Thank you.
Fue super divertido y la verdad nos... A mí me encantó la experiencia y gracias por la invitación.
Bueno, gracias por la invitación. De hecho, estuvo increíble conversar otra vez los cuatro. Creo que, bueno, no conversábamos hace un tiempo, desde, creo que un poco antes de la pandemia o a inicio de la pandemia. Así que ha sido súper cool poder conversar con los tres y nada, cuando se pueda repetir sería increíble, ¿no?
Muchísimas gracias por escucharnos donde quiera que se encuentren. Les pedimos que por favor nos sigan, si les gustó este podcast, que nos sigan en las diferentes redes sociales, que nos escuchen en las diferentes plataformas y también que nos sigan en nuestros perfiles de redes sociales. Nos pueden seguir en Instagram como Mentors Today. No olviden que dentro del perfil pueden dar clic al link que está en la biografía para enviarnos su pregunta y cada semana poder participar. Pues nada, Rob, that's all. We finished for today.
We'll talk to you next week. Thanks.
Bye-bye.